Welcome to another episode of Relentlessly Resilient, where real people share real life experiences and the tools they've developed to move forward and live their best life. I'm Jenny Taylor.
I'm Michelle Scharf, and we are today going to speak with a friend of mine, Renee Milne. Renee and I have really crossed paths through politics, but our relationship has been being built because we travel together. We've been to Peru. We've dared to eat terrible things together.
There's a certain bond that comes when you go to another part of the planet together.
Well, and then there's that time that she was my babysitter and kept me safe and stopped me from fraternizing, what's that word, with the locals. Anyway.
Oh, Renee, that had to have been a challenging job.
It was fun.
Yeah, I think, you know, being a teacher, vice principal, it's just a natural role.
There she goes. She's your chaperone. Oh, that's hilarious.
And sometimes Michelle likes to pretend that she's a child again, right?
Just embrace it.
Yeah, who doesn't? For sure.
So, Renee, tell us about you. Introduce yourself to our guests.
So, like Michelle said, my name is Renee, and we have crossed paths in the political world. My husband was an elected official, and I was the spouse of an elected official. So that's an intense world. And then I've been in education, and we've traveled together and currently living in Logan.
Okay, well, I feel like there's more I don't know. Tell me really quickly, what level of politics was your husband in, and what level of education have you been involved in? I was married to a city councilman and a mayor, and I used to teach high school. So I feel like I've got a little kinship that I didn't know about coming into this conversation.
100% connected. So Sean was on planning and zoning, city council, and county commissioner for a long, long time. And I was a secondary teacher and an administrator and a director, higher ed.
Wow. Okay, we'll have to talk offline because all of this is my passion. So let's jump back into your conversation. But thank you for being married to someone that's helping with local government. And thank you for being an educator and such an advocate for our kids. I love that.
Yeah,
those
are both very exhausting roles to play.
I saw you piping up over there, and I'm like, guys should know each other, actually. It's funny
sure
that you don't.
Maybe at some point we're at some conference together without realizing it.
I think we've just always missed each other at dinners and things.
Sure.
Either I couldn't go or you couldn't go.
Yeah. So. Well, we're here today not to talk politics or PTA in the classroom, though we would love to. Jump in a little bit more of your background and then what we're here today to talk about and learn with you.
So I've just been talking to Michelle for a while and wanted to maybe share in grief because I had an incident happen with my brother, and that happened in 2005 when I was a teacher. And then when I became a vice principal, I felt like my mission sometimes was to help students going through grief. And there's just been so much that I was the one that they could come to and listen to. And I think trying to make it as positive as possible is really important for people for their healing. Just the way I grew up too, I've been through some things, and having grit and resilience is super important, and you can never be a victim. At least that's how I look at it.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's what makes you resilient.
Well, and I love that what you mentioned even before we began recording, that you're looking to find the positive in something that's negative. And of course, losing a brother, losing a loved one is for sure negative.
Definitely. It's a hard path to take and unexpected. And I had no idea all the feelings that come with it.
Well, tell us your story.
All right. Well, my brother was moving to Denver to go to graduate school and passed away on the way in Wyoming. He was going to Denver. And it was just a tragic accident with another vehicle on I-80, which was already awful.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, the things that stand out are getting the phone call, imagining how my mom got the news from the police officers, everybody convening at my mom's, and just going from there, being in go mode. Like, I called the university and told them, called all the family and told them. We have family all over the Midwest. Just trying to handle all of those things. So a little more detail about the accident. There was a snowstorm, and the U-Haul that another family member was driving went off of I-80 And then my brother was in another car and pulled over, ran out to the U-Haul to see if they could get unstuck or if something could happen. And then a semi came and went off at the same spot and took out my brother and the family member.
Both your brother and the other family member?
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty terrible. And there was one survivor. We don't communicate. I mean, it's just tragic for everybody. Just awful. And then trying to get him back from another state and, like, just the craziness of the police reports and, you know, just all these things you don't think happen. You have no idea what happens until you go through it.
Tell me where your mom lives. Obviously, you said the accident happened in Wyoming. Someone from Wyoming had to... So she's in Sandy, Utah. Did they call her? Did someone show up personally?
I think Sandy police did the notification.
It's just heartbreaking. Nobody ever wants someone like that to knock on your door because they don't usually just stop by to say hi.
No, I remember, I think it was around 2 a.m. And I remember, I mean, this was 2005. I think I had an old brick cell phone and it was plugged in across the bedroom and like it startled me out of sleep and I missed the call and there was a terrible voicemail. It didn't say anything specific, just a very frantic, call me, call me.
Oh, my goodness.
So I call back and it was pretty hard.
So devastating. You know, the most dangerous thing any of us do.
Every day.
Is drive. Multiple times a day. We get in our cars and we drive. And, you know, my dad would always, you know, because I've lived here and they live in California. Whenever I'd come out to see them, he's like, okay, you need to call me as soon as you leave. And then it was like this constant connection during our travel, both to and from every time. And it used to drive me crazy because I'm like, if something happens, there's nothing that can be done.
Sure.
But
well, that's how we are now for sure.
Right.
Is it?
Exactly.
Text message, I'm leaving. I should be there. Okay, we made it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's almost like too much. It's almost a little OCD or something,
well,
but
and I
we do it.
Yeah. I don't know about you, Renee, but we've had some, you know, tragedies in our family where there was a time my brother and sister-in-law lost a two-month-old baby to SIDS, and that phone ringing in the middle of the night or that late-night call. Another brother-in-law of mine was missing and suicidal in the late-night call. And so anytime if my phone, if it either goes off later, you know, past a reasonable hour, or if someone from the family calls and maybe does or does not leave a message or all they say is call me, I will tell you it triggers panic. Even if they're calling to say, hey, I'm getting ice cream or something, but just that I've almost been conditioned that that call, hey, call me, could mean something awful has happened. So I can't imagine in your experience with driving being something we do every single day and your family's spread out. My heart goes out to you. This is a horrible tragedy.
And it sounds like he was, you know, heading to grad school. That's an exciting thing. I'm sure everybody was full of excitement and proud of him and excited for the adventure. Yeah.
Yep. All of his stuff. You know, he tried to take as much as he could. He was going to start a new life there. And
walk us through that immediate response, reaction, the grief, the funeral. We kind of always look for where does that resilience start to kick in when you have to face what you absolutely do not want to or ever think you would have to face?
I think my mom is single, divorced, and so I kind of took on that role of a spouse for her, where I just, not being, you know, the parent of the child, but being support for her. Like, I stayed at her house. I slept with her. I made sure she was okay. I made all the phone calls. And then I think you kind of hit a wall yourself. You know, the grief, because you're, like, you're doing business. You got to get stuff done. You got to do the obituary. And, like, there's kind of this protocol, but you do need, I think you definitely need, like, your best friend or somebody to help you through that process, to drive you. Like, none of us wanted to drive, period.
Oh, my gosh.
And then just going through the mechanics of it, and then the emotions start hitting. And then, you know, it's not just your family. It's, like, your family and friends are trying to check on you. And, you know, I had to call and make sure I had a sub for a week. And my husband was contacting everybody that he knew that had done business. My brother had worked for my husband for a while, and he was contacting people that he knew would want to know. And it's just crazy. And then there's all the legalities and all the other things. You know, he's an unmarried young man, doesn't have any assets, but now there might be a claim, and then things start happening. Like, I don't want to go into details there. It's all settled, but I don't want to bring it up for anybody. It was a hard time for everybody. So.
Right.
You don't think about, I appreciate what you mentioned. There's the mechanics and the emotion, because there are certain things like planning the funeral, filling out the police report. There's all those to-dos. And yet somehow you're expected to process all of those to-dos while weighed down with the grief that is just physically debilitating.
Yeah. And, you know, there's all of those tasks to do, right? But you say plan a funeral. There's so many decisions to be made within.
And they have to be made right now.
Yeah.
It's not
yep.
like you have months and months of an engagement to plan the wedding and dream of it your whole life.
And let
Most
me think
of us
about
plan
this.
The funeral right now.
Right. Like what yep. what kind of a box? Is it going to be a pine box, a wooden box, a
yep.
steel box, a painted box?
And how much do those boxes cost?
Right.
And who's going to, yeah.
Yeah.
Which
the reality
cemetery,
of the money,
which
too.
Flowers?
Yeah. yeah. yeah.
No, death is a very expensive thing.
It's expensive, and it is as big as planning a wedding.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
all of the...
Without that jubilation mm-hmm. and anticipation. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then it's, you know, rehashing the story over and over. And
everyone asks what happened.
yeah. Yeah, and are you okay? And so now when I
hate that word.
Handle
or question.
Grief, I know. Instead of that, I'll just be like, hey, I don't even know what to say. I'm thinking of you.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what to say, even though I've been through it on some level. I haven't lost a spouse.
I haven't lost
my mom yet, you know.
Having been through it on some level makes you more compassionate to the fact that you don't know what the other person's going through. I think sometimes when we haven't been through things, we imagine what we think it would be like. Versus when we've been through something, we recognize I have no way of really feeling what you exactly feel, but I know it's awful and heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes all we can say is, I'm so sorry. Or like yeah. you said, I'm thinking of you. I won't even try to fix it. I'm not going to try to explain it away.
I will
Just
say,
know I'm devastated with you.
As much as I hate saying, are you okay? I find myself at fault constantly. We are so programmed to
How
ask. It just
You're
spills
right.
out of my mouth. And then I say, please
yep.
don't answer that. I
yeah.
immediately say,
I did not mean that.
Please don't answer that. I already know. It's
yes.
okay that you're not okay. It's okay.
Yep.
And,
so,
but there's that process, right? And you learn those through these experiences.
I kind of front loaded like coming back to work too. I talked to my good colleague and I said, I really don't want to talk about it. I just want to come back and get to work. And he's like, oh, are you sure? I'm like, yeah, I think so. So he kind of like warned some people that I didn't want to chat, but then I did. And then I was an art teacher at the time, too. So then I was, like, making paintings to express how I was feeling about my brother and what happened. And they weren't great or anything. Like, they were just for me. They were just to express my feelings.
Right. That emotional outlet is so important in that healing
so there,
and grieving process.
Yeah. So there's awesome ones. There's anger ones. There's a bunch of his hats. Like, he always wore a baseball hat. And so I did a painting of a bunch of his hats. And then I made a CD for his friends. Like, remember, this is 2005. So I'm making CDs. I'm mm-hmm. not doing playlists, you know.
That's, sure.
It was a while ago. And then, you know, that year of first is so hard. Like,
yeah.
your first birthday without them, first Christmas, whatever was important to them and you. He was a huge baseball fan. So I, like, we organized a thing with all his friends. And we went to batting cages. And, like, you just had to find something positive, even though it hurts so bad to get together.
I
you can tell that he's gone.
I love the list that you're providing us of
I was
unique,
just taking good notes.
Unique opportunities to honor him. And yeah, I'm sure it was hard to do, and at the same time it's like you had to do something.
Yeah.
That energy.
Yeah. We need to take a break. When we come back, we're gonna talk more. We'll be right back. We're back. Renee, so many great ideas. So tell us, you're planning these events. It is hard to make the effort to get together, but how do those events go? And do they bring you some solace in the process?
Yeah, I think everybody's different. I think like what I needed wasn't what my husband needed, or my mom and I are pretty similar. So I think things I would come up with, she'd be like, yeah, I like that idea. Let's do that. And then I have another brother and I don't think he needed things the way I did. Like, his coping was different too. I mean, everybody participated, but I felt like I kind of needed to keep going and have answers, or, you know, was he okay? Did he know? Did he feel anything? We actually went and talked to a medium, my mom and I, years later, and we're comforted by some things that he told us. And whether they're right or wrong, I choose to believe in them. And so I'm content and happy, and he's in the best place out of all of us. So.
Renee, I love what you mentioned about each person grieving differently and giving each other space for that. And it sounds, you know, we talk a lot about these principles or pillars of resilience. Your self-awareness is very impressive, that you knew what you needed and that you acted on that. Because sometimes I think in the thick of grief or the difficulty, we become hypersensitive to the people around us and we feel like we've got to help them, or you've got to help your mom, or you've got to do what your brother needs or what your husband needs. But for you to be able to say, this is what I needed, and that was okay, and everyone can participate and grieve together and do it in your own way. I think that self-awareness was a beautiful thing for the rest of us to learn from, that it's okay if your grief looks different from someone else's. It's okay if you have different questions or pursue a different path, and you don't have to force each other into the same box.
Yeah, I think I learned that through this process, because I was definitely a crier. I am a crier. I can cry when I'm frustrated. I can cry when I'm mad. I can cry when I'm happy. So I think it's cleansing for me. I don't love it when it happens in front of other people, but, you know, sometimes it just does. Yeah. Or on a podcast like today. But I think I learned, yeah, everybody does things differently. Like my other brother, maybe a hike in the mountains is what he needs. And my husband can just, like, talk to him and he's fine. Like, he does his own thing too. And my mom, you know, donates money to a charitable event every year in his name for Christmas. Like, that makes her feel good. So it's like all about us, those that are still here, and how it makes us feel good. And I think my mindfulness, it's been a journey for sure. Do a lot of yoga and things like that, trying to tap into it, find the root cause of my feelings instead of lashing out or other things that can happen, just being aware of how I'm feeling and what's going on. And am I really upset about this, or am I just blaming that because I'm feeling something else?
This is all like this is straight out of a textbook. Some of the things you're telling us, like how to build resilience, what resilience looks like. I'm impressed to hear you talk about these coping mechanisms.
Yeah.
Michelle knows, and I've talked about it before, that question. My husband once asked me what my coping mechanisms were. You just listed several. Maybe going for a hike, maybe doing this, maybe that. Might be different for each person. But being able to be aware and tap into that for yourself can help you face and cope with what you've got to handle.
I love that you brought up that your mom and you went and visited a medium. I have shared on this podcast several times that I have done that. And in fact, I just visited one last week.
Oh, good.
And I have found somebody that I connect with, and who I believe my husband has a great ability to come through for her.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just in a place of like, I am stuck and I just need to connect and figure out what's going on here. And she had some great insights for me. And I think it can be very valuable.
I think so, too. And I think any signs, like whatever you want to see, you're going to see.
Yep.
I feel like some things that happened right after he passed away was a white dove landed in our backyard. Like, I don't know how common that is. I would understand like a gray dove or pigeons, but like a white dove. And we were able to get it. Like, we caught it.
Right.
And it was our pet
for
a long time.
Oh, you actually caught it.
Not just like caught on to the moment. No, she physically caught the bird.
Oh, my gosh.
So we're like,
oh, I think you just totally shocked Michelle.
Because I was thinking, oh, yeah, that's true, right?
It's a message.
Like, what's the chances that you would actually catch that moment?
Yeah.
But you
caught that bird.
You caught the moment and the bird.
But we had other birds at the time, too. So it was very natural for us to have birds.
Aviation family.
It probably was somebody's and it got lost, but I chose to take that as a sign, like a message from my brother. Mm-hmm. Like, it's good. It's peaceful.
See, but that's,
I'm good.
Back to these beautiful pillars of resilience and purpose, finding purpose. I know Michelle and I have talked about this, where you can find something, and sure, you could call it a coincidence, a song on the radio, a bird in the backyard, a heart-shaped stone on the ground. I choose to see more meaning in that. You can think I'm crazy and it's just a coincidence, but it brings me peace. and hope and healing when I have moments like that where, for me, I know for sure it's my late husband sending me a message, or it's God saying something, or my father or someone. And yeah, you can look at me and say I'm absolutely crazy. I know what it is to me, and that personal meaning and personal purpose helps me develop that resilience.
Oh, absolutely. Yep. And I think also acknowledging the purpose, the universe will serve you up more of that. So I started seeing dragonflies. I see them everywhere now. And it's interesting when they pop up, and sometimes in the oddest of places where it's not natural that you'd encounter a dragonfly.
And you know it's not a coincidence.
And I know it's not. I absolutely know it's not. And I think sometimes it's just acknowledgement of saying, this is who I see when I see this, and the universe will bring those to you when you need to see them the most.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think our first act that we really focused on too was from the settlement. We set up a scholarship in his name at the university he was going to attend.
Oh, wow.
Because we're like, you know what? These young people deserve a chance. They should be educated if they want. And like, this is what my brother would have wanted. Like, none of us were selfish and like spent money on ourselves, you know, and this was to honor him. And that was also very healing for us. It's kind of selfish for us. Those poor kids had to meet us a couple times. And, you know, you just kind of like put all your emotions on them. You try not to, but you're just like so excited for them and hope they do well. And there was that. We did, like, my mom would donate money for Christmas, like I already mentioned, but we would also sometimes host families and meet them and give them presents. And, you know, it's all for our own healing. The departed, like I said before, they're in the best place ever. We're the ones here trying to deal with all of it and be resilient and mindful, like the pillars you said. And there's just so many ways that you can handle it. And I would just hope people would try to find something positive instead of getting stuck in the depression and the anxiety of it.
Can I ask, Renee, I love this positivity. I love these steps that you've shared. Surely there's times when you're in the negative, when you're in the depression, when that emotion is overwhelming. What are some of the things now that it's been a number of years? I mean, I'm sure you feel like it was yesterday and 1,000 years ago all at once. What are maybe some of the moments of grief and waves of grief like now? And how do you help yourself maybe swim through that or face that even after? I mean, it's been a decade and a half, almost 2 decades already.
Mm-hmm.
Walk us through, you know, sometimes I think we focus on the grief that first year. Like you said, that first year has its own set of everything. Everything is hard that first year, but it's not like it just goes away because time goes by. Can you talk a little bit about what that looks like today after all these years?
Yeah, I think depending on the year, it seems easier. Some years you anticipate the anniversary of the passing, the birthdays, the everything. And other years, I don't know, it's calmer for me, but I think I try to just get my feelings out, whether it's, I think exercise is really important for me. I know I'll come home some days after a stressful day and be like, change and leave and tell the husband, I'm like, okay, I'm out. Like, I've got to go exercise. And he knows, he doesn't want to be around me unless I do go exercise. So like,
that
I get it.
That physical component.
Perfect. So being able to do that or recognize it, because it's easy to just come home and be like, oh, I'll just take a nap instead. Which sometimes you do just need to take a nap. I think things like this, like the podcast, just talking through it, expressing it, sharing it. Thought about writing a book. I'm not really a book writer, but man, it.
Michelle's writing a book.
I'm writing a book.
I think there's such value in the story because, you know, we'll spend 30 or 40 minutes hearing your story or the overview of it, but the depth of it, I think if you've ever considered recording it into a book, I think maybe encourage you to look at that. There's so much the rest of us gain when we see experiences of others.
True. And I think that's probably like a lot of what I am drawn to as well, as similar stories or how to make it positive, how to not be a victim as well. Another side note, like we grew up kind of in some trauma, and luckily my mom got us out of that situation. And then it's like, man, I've had this, and happen, and I'm still kicking. I beat the odds. I'm not a statistic. I'm not all these things that I
should
have
been. You're the victor, not the victim. Yeah.
Yeah, and so why? Why did that happen for me? Well, if you study ACEs, I had a strong adult in my life. My mom was always really, really strong. Great teachers. That's probably why I became an educator. Just people kind of, I'm sure they knew my situation or they could tell that I needed a little more. And so I think that's kind of like been my profession. And oh my gosh, I'm so emotional today.
It's okay. We tend to draw it out in people. It's okay. And I love your vulnerability. I know it's hard for you, but it's really beautiful.
Just helping young people, like, we're not going to have anything good if we don't help them, if we don't support them, if we don't try to show them the path. They'll make their own mistakes, but I can't even imagine what it would be like to be a young person right now and not have any support.
Such tough times we're in right now. So much disconnection when we all so badly just want to feel connected.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We need to take another really quick break. We'll be right back. Back. Renee, this has been beautiful and heart touching. Thank you for your vulnerability and your tears, your honest tears. It is interesting. Like Jenny said, it's been more than a decade. And I think it's important for people to hear that when you talk about it, you reconnect with that loss. And it can be just as traumatic as the day that you got the news. That is what grief and loss is like. We have moments where we're not in touch with that all the time, and thank goodness, because it would be a miserable existence. But in some ways, it's so nice to connect with it at moments because it's a reminder of the love that we had for that person. To me, that's how I feel about it. It's not somewhere I want to stand in all of the time.
But to let yourself acknowledge that. I remember one of the most beautiful moments for me was shortly after my husband was killed. I met another widow who was about 10 years out from her loss, and she was still loving and emotional. And instead of feeling weighed down by the fact that I would be emotional for a decade or more, it was beautiful to me that no matter how much time passed, and she's living a beautiful, meaningful life, and she still loves, and she still lost, and it still hurts, and she could still process that emotion. So I love, you know, people say time heals all wounds, as if time is just this magic clock that erases everything. I think what happens over time is we learn to be stronger. We learn to recognize our emotions. Hopefully we become more self-aware and more mindful. But I don't think it's time that just magically erases all the feeling, and we wouldn't want it to. We would never want to erase that feeling and that emotion that comes with that love.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of work that has to go into it as well, like feel the feelings.
Yeah, absolutely.
If it's a bad day, I mean, embrace it and try to learn from it and move on. Those will come. You know what sets me off is he's a huge Chicago Cubs fan. Mm. And if I see a little boy wearing a Cubs hat, oh my gosh, I'll be bawling. I could be in Walmart, and you know, or where some store, and I'll be bawling. That's a trigger.
That's
because it just
trigger.
Reminds me of him instantly.
Yeah.
Some little quirky smile he's got. That could be it too. Now, you know, like in grief too, he's got some funny little stinker things that the medium would talk to me about. Like he loved to tease me. It's not all roses just because they're gone. I mean, you remember like, oh, you wouldn't do your chores growing up, or he's so annoying, you know, things like that. But
you remember the whole person. Yeah.
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 And that's
important.
Easy
to focus on the beautiful, positive things because that's the part you miss. You don't miss that they wouldn't help you do chores when you were a teenager. But
there's a misperception out there that those who grieve only remember the good things. And honestly, my husband's best friend and I, we were on the phone the other day and I was kind of harassing my husband about some things. I was talking to him about the things. With my husband's best friend. And he laughed and he goes, well, I'm glad you sure remember John as John.
Right.
And not this
sanctified.
I said, oh, Mark, I remember the total of it. I remember the total. I have not put him as saint. But I think people misperceive that because we only talk about sometimes the good things, right? Like that whole...
Well, and Jenny, like yours was in the news too. Like, oh, I think that would be hard. But I'm assuming things. I don't know.
Well, no. And that's something I've been mindful of with my own kids, making sure my kids know their dad as a person and not just a war hero, though I'm grateful that, that he's been celebrated. We have a new home we just moved into, and in the front living room we have Brent's uniform, and it's framed, and we have some of his medals. It's beautiful, and sometimes it's a little overwhelming. And so we make sure we tell the stories, and everybody knows it. Brent Taylor loved Peeps and Circus Peanuts. Like, you guys, that's crazy. There's the man who was the mayor of a city of 20,000 that wouldn't spend $10 on a haircut, but made me do it, and I'm a terrible haircutter. I mean, telling those quirks. Sometimes it is with one of Brent's friends or brothers that you just tell the story. You're like, oh, yeah, he was actually a human. He had flaws. And I think that's refreshing. I don't think it's disrespectful at all.
It's not.
It's healthy. I know in terms of a relationship, Michelle, as you've moved forward in dating relationships and things, I know if that ever comes to be a part of my future, I will have some things I have to work through in my own heart and mind about the imperfections of our personal relationship. And I think every relationship has imperfections, whether it's your little brother or a spouse or a child or whatever, and being able to be okay with accepting that whole person. And I think that is part of, you know, one of those great pillars of resilience. We talk about the positive relationships. Do we have positive relationships that don't have to be perfect? Mm-hmm. I'm not perfect. Brent wasn't perfect. Right. Your brother wasn't perfect. And yet, can we celebrate the goodness and remember all of it, and you know, with a laugh and a smile. And
I think it's great. Renee, tell us what resilience means to you.
I think it means not giving up, being inspired by others who have been through similar things or hard times, and you see how they pick themselves up or what foundation they put their energy towards to deal with whatever they've been a part of. And I think also, you know, being like a strong professional woman for myself, working hard, being a good example to others. Something as simple as, you know, picking up the trash as I'm walking down the college hall, or just being an example to students who come and meet with me. And I just actually ran into a previous high school student that I taught at Twilla High. We live in the same area now, and we ran into each other, and she's actually an art teacher. And I just was like,
oh my gosh, that's got to make your heart so happy.
It was awesome.
That's
and
beautiful.
And her husband's a counselor, and I'm just like, oh, good. And I have a couple others. We just don't live in the same area. And
sure.
That's awesome. That's the stuff when I'm having a bad day I need to remember.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The fruits of your labors. And I love that you mentioned, and you almost mentioned it in passing, but the fact that you are an educator and an advocate for young people because you had good advocates in your life. You had good teachers. You had your strong mother helping you through difficult times. And I think how beautiful that for you... You mentioned resilience is helping others and not just focusing on yourself, but the beauty you find, the healing you find in just trying to be there for someone else, whether it's a kid at college or the high school student or whatever. I think there's a lot to learn there that as a strong professional woman, you find joy and meaning in helping other people. That's beautiful, Renee.
Yep. Thank you. You said it very well. Thank you.
I really enjoyed getting to know you. I wish we lived a lot closer, actually, because for people that know Renee, and my experience of Renee is that she's somebody who's really grounded in who she is, which you don't find a ton of people necessarily that way in the world, in my experience. And I appreciate that. And the way you carry yourself, like just your examples, I'm like, yep, that's Renee.
Thank you.
It's just who she does. And she's always there to support or help. In just the way of being that she is. I mean, she doesn't necessarily have to do anything, but you always feel like if I need your arm around me, it will be there.
That's beautiful.
And I definitely did in Belize.
Keep her out of trouble, Renee.
She did a good job.
We had a good time. This last trip was definitely a lot more of this kind of conversation.
The first Belize trip was just keeping me out of trouble. The second one, it was a lot deeper. It was a lot more depth. And of course, I went into the trip just at zero.
Yeah,
I went in having lost a relationship, lost an election, and I just needed a place to just let go and also just be raw and vulnerable. And I met some really beautiful people that I have created much deeper, meaningful connections. And two people, Renee and Jake, another friend mm-hmm. of mine, I felt like we got a lot closer on the trip, mm-hmm. which I was really excited about because both of them, they're a lot more quiet than I am, a lot less needing to go outside themselves, but they were very available. And I think with me being in a softer space, it really created a vulnerability for all of us to just really connect.
And I think sometimes travel is some of the best form of therapy out there. I know sometimes like a family vacation or something where you have that time that you're not doing the day-to-day that sometimes is a distraction. You're in a different environment. You're in a different mindset. Sometimes we let ourselves open up and connect on a different level. So I'm all in favor of Belize. Just stay out of trouble, please. We don't want to have to try to bail you out.
Well, that's
anybody that puts themselves out there in the public and like runs an election. I mean, as a spouse of somebody, it is super hard. But to actually be the one, the politician, the candidate, mm-hmm. man, it's tough because people. Some people are nice and some people are not nice.
Some people are really, really ugly. And some men are really, really intimidating. And it is hard. I've still been receiving some harassing phone calls. I'm getting to the point where I think I might reach out to the police and just file a report.
Terrible.
It is hard, right? Unless you actually do it. Like that, is it Theodore Roosevelt, the man in the arena?
Yes. That, it's not the critic who counts. That's right. A fabulous quote. Yes.
And there's like, I feel that when I read that in more ways after the second election. This is the second time I've run. Oh, wow. And I think it's also why I'm ready to just admire others for their willingness to throw their hat in the arena.
Brene Brown has a great quote, something like, if you're not in the arena getting your butt kicked too, I'm not interested. Yep. That's one of my favorite quotes.
Yeah. That's a great one.
You have no idea.
It is mine as well. And it's so funny. In the dating world, somebody said, why don't you show up before you chime in or something like that? And I was like, whoa, buddy, you have no idea who
Watch
you're
out.
Speaking to. But, you know, for me, while I thought that, I also thought, and you don't deserve another comment.
Never mind.
And never mind. Yeah. Like, you don't deserve another moment.
But again, that's the resilience of a positive relationship and knowing where to put that energy in and that focus.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Well, Renee, thank you for joining us today. Thank you for your story. You're inspiring, and you've really laid the entire foundation of what resiliency is all about.
Yeah. Like you said,
thank you both.
You personify that. I hope we get to meet in person at some point. I do remember I went to a tailgate event at Utah State not long ago with Sean, and we had some good food and ice cream together before the game. Me and my kids were there, but I don't think you were there, or if you were, you might have been with students. So hopefully next time we're up for some Aggie ice cream and Aggie football, we can enjoy it together. But just thank you. Thank you for living a life where you, like you started this, finding the positive in the negative and just refusing to be a victim. I think those two right there just really embody everything you've shared with us today. Thanks for joining us on the show.
Thank you both so much.
And if you've liked what you've heard, you can subscribe for free to our podcast and give us a rating and review if it's available on the platform you listen on. If you know someone who has a real story about real life and they're willing to share with us, send us an email at rrpodcast@ksl.com. You can also find us on Facebook at Relentlessly Resilient or on Instagram at Relentlessly Resilient Podcast.
And remember, whatever you do today, remember to be kind. You have no idea the struggles other people are dealing with in their lives. Have a good day, everyone.
Thanks.